This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Medical News Network. We're about to speak to Tim Church, who's the director of communications director at the Department of Health for the state of Washington. Welcome to Utopia Media's Medical News Network.
Thank you.
Why don't we talk first about what the role generally is of the Department of Health in the Washington state governmental structure?
Well, the Washington State Department of Health has many responsibilities, and certainly emergency preparedness and planning is one of them. We also are involved with regulating healthcare providers. We have a community and family health section. We work with drinking water, making sure our drinking water is safe. We have broad responsibilities.
How big is your annual budget?
You know, I don't have that information, but we have about 1,500 employees.
Okay, that's a good measure. What so far has your department done to develop and put into place plans for dealing with possible advent of a pandemic avian flu incident?
You know, we've been concerned about avian flu or pandemic flu for quite some time. Our Secretary of Health really has made planning for a pandemic a priority for the last couple of years. Back in April, we held a cross-border conference with our colleagues in British Columbia to share our plans, learn from their situation when they had avian flu a year ago in chickens, and really just agree to be on the same page as we move ahead. We've developed a pandemic flu plan in Washington State. We have a communications plan that goes along with it. And now we're in the process of really doing the real work about putting those plans into place and getting things done.
Okay, I want to talk about those plans and what you're doing to put them into place. I didn't know there was avian flu in British Columbia. Was that of the H5N1 variety?
You know, I don't have that amount of detail. I'm not a doctor, but they did have a serious outbreak of avian flu in poultry and had to destroy quite a few.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe after we're done talking, you can give me the number of your counterpart in British Columbia and I can talk to them.
I can find it.
See what they were up to. What's the general thrust of the planning that you've done so far? What's the strategic plan?
Well, it's a big picture plan, and we're getting down to the details right now. Let me give you an example. We're working with local health departments who are working with their hospitals in communities around the state. Because one of the things we know is when and if we have a pandemic, we will have more patients in hospitals than we've ever seen. And that would be very difficult for a hospital to manage. So we're working with the local health departments and the hospitals to make sure hospitals have plans in place and to find out if there are strong plans, to make sure those are being shared throughout our state, because a pandemic is something that could strike anywhere. It might start in Seattle. It could start in a small community somewhere else, and so all need to have some equal level of preparedness.
How important is surveillance within the state and observing global surveillance? How important is that in the process?
Surveillance is certainly an important part of the process. Our lab, as well as our system of epidemiologists around the state, the people who do a lot of the surveillance, has been beefed up with preparedness funds over the past few years. And so we have a strong surveillance system in Washington State, not only with regional epidemiologists, some local epidemiologists and health officers, but also the state system to back that up. And, of course, we work with healthcare professionals around the state who are on the lookout for anything that might just seem odd or unusual.
What can you say about the specifics of how people are alerted? Do they essentially, have you publicized the symptoms in fowl of avian flu and the symptoms in humans and admonished everyone to be on the lookout? Or what specifically are you doing at the level of low granularity to inform the people who are going to be the surveillance point people?
We've provided some information like that through local health departments. And then local health departments are the ones who really have the contact with the healthcare providers on a detail level like that. And it fits right in with our general flu surveillance. You know, we're always on the lookout for flu or unusual illnesses around the state. For example, we have certain adult homes that are on the lookout and report their number of illnesses to flu-like symptoms around the state. And so we get a feel for if that's an expected level or if it's going up or down. We have contacts with schools throughout the state. and we look for absenteeism rates that start to spike, and that's another way of keeping track of if we're having any kind of unusual illness. Now, that's primarily for the flu, but it serves the same purpose. It allows us to see if there's an abnormal amount of people becoming ill, and then we can place an emphasis on making sure we're getting tests from those areas and know what is causing people to get sick.
How computerized and automated and coordinated is that surveillance system? Is there a lot of paperwork, or people put things into computers and they're immediately monitored at higher levels? How does that work?
It is not incredibly computerized at this point. We're in the process of improving some of those systems, but I'm not the detail person when it comes down to the specific system on reporting.
Has the legislature or the executive branch gotten involved in this and taken any steps to provide extra budget to automate or computerize the surveillance and response process?
Certainly there's interest on the legislative level and from our governor. You know, they're interested and concerned, and we're keeping close contact with them. The majority of funding for preparedness, all of the funding for preparedness actually, is coming from the federal level.
How much of that is coming? Do you know?
I do not.
Okay. Tell us what surge capacity is and how important that will be in responding to a pandemic, and what the levels of capacity in that area now are by your reading.
Surge capacity is essentially how prepared hospitals are to handle large numbers of patients. And more than just hospitals, actually communities in general, because a community might be forced, if they have a large number of patients, to use an alternate facility, a gymnasium, a stadium, something to that effect, if they had huge numbers of patients.
Are plans like that in existence and ready to go, or will they need to be developed on an ad hoc basis should there be a problem?
It's really across the board. There are some communities that have identified specific buildings that they would use to handle large numbers of patients. There are some that are not that far down the road, but everyone is in the process of developing plans just like that.
What's the state's role? What's your department's role in coordinating or facilitating or accelerating that process?
The state's role is really serving as a resource to the local communities, to checking in with them, to sharing our plan with them, to asking them if they are having any struggles reaching the goals that they're trying for in terms of preparedness, and then seeing if we can provide some information or other resources that help them get beyond those. But that kind of work really does happen at the local level with guidance and support from the state, as well as funding that's passed through the state from the federal preparedness money.
Okay.
But I will say this about the federal preparedness money.
Right.
We began receiving federal preparedness money not long after September 11, 2001, to help us be more prepared for a terrorism attack, a biological attack, any kind of a large public health emergency.
Right.
We've put those funds to good use, but as we've gotten further and further from September 11th, those funds have declined. Well, the amount of work and projects that were being given to complete have climbed.
Would you like to see more money from the federal government?
Without a doubt.
Are your representatives in Washington working on that?
Well, they're certainly aware of our concern. Our Democratic senator just the other day made a statement in Congress about concern over the president's recent pandemic flu proposal, because it does not have enough money to help states and locals do the kind of work we're talking about.
Okay. Washington State has some fair-sized cities, and it also has a lot of rural areas. What's the relationship between the two in terms of their preparedness or the problems that are likely to arise in, say, Seattle versus some small town? And what's the State Department of Health's role in leveling out providing specific responses in urban versus rural areas?
In our state, we certainly have recognized that while an urban area may certainly have more people, that doesn't necessarily increase the risk of that particular area for an emergency more than other areas. That's why we've made it a point to give some level of base funding to every community, be it rural or urban, in this state. let me give you an example of that. We have several small communities along the border of Canada, many in very rural areas. But it's very important that they have some resources and ability to be prepared as much as the urban areas that do not border Canada. As I said, there was an avian flu outbreak in Canada a year or so back, and those rural communities were on the front lines. They were the ones who were on the lookout to see if we were going to have the avian flu cross the border in chickens. So it's important that you have preparedness across the board, rural and urban. Although we certainly recognize that an urban area like Seattle or Spokane has more people, more planning, more fire department and personnel. It's a more complicated process to plan for an urban area, and it takes more funding.
Okay. What have you, what you're talking about the chickens coming over the border, do you expect or have you made plans for different possible arrival routes of avian flu in Washington State, among them being chickens shipped over the border, migratory fowl heading south through the state, or individual people infected already, because the essence of the pandemic flu is that it'll be transmissible human to human. Procedures at the border, at the airports, to surveil, note, and deal with incoming infected animals or humans?
Well, you just noted many different areas, some of which fall under the State Department of Health area, which I work in, and many other areas. And that kind of work is going on, but it's much broader than just public health. Our Department of Agriculture is heavily involved in working with Canada and our local communities regarding planning and preparedness for avian flu in poultry. We work closely with the Centers for Disease Control that have a special office at SeaTac Airport, a quarantine office, and they have a plan for people arriving via plane. We work closely with our state wildlife, Fish and Wildlife Department, who is boning up on the latest information about migratory birds and their part they could play in this.
Is there one central state agency that coordinates everything?
No, there is not. We all have pieces of it. Certainly in terms of human health, the Washington State Department of Health would be the lead. But in terms of those other areas, like I said, they each have their own area of expertise, their own partners, and their own relationships that they've developed that make them the best people to do that work.
Is the work now pretty well coordinated from your point of view? Are there any bottlenecks or turf battles going on that might impede a smooth operation?
I'm not aware of anything like that, but there's certainly more work to do. The pandemic flu preparedness is a huge undertaking, and it's not something that someone does overnight. There's new partners involved and new work, and trying to do our best to sort out what is needed to protect the people of our state and our region. And there's no there's no rule to follow in particular. This is something new in terms of our world facing a threat this large in modern time. The last pandemics, the world has changed since then, and we're going to have to change in how we manage it.
How high on the priority list of projects for the Department of Health is this right now?
Pandemic flu preparedness is certainly right at the top of our priority list.
Okay. You mentioned regional neighbors. What are you doing to coordinate with Oregon, California, Idaho, Montana, nearby states on that level?
We're sharing information, sharing plans. Our cross-border conference we held with Canada, we invited our neighbors in Idaho, Montana, Oregon, the communications people, the epidemiologists, and others to attend. We're just doing our best to make sure our plans fit together well and we're on the same page. And we'll continue to share information regularly with them.
Okay. On the subject of vaccines and antivirals, does the state of Washington have a policy on stockpiling those tools against avian flu?
We do not have a policy on those at this point. We had been waiting for the federal plans to come forward to see what they entailed, and now that we have them, we're going to be taking those into consideration as we move forward with our planning.
Okay, how important is protecting frontline health workers against avian flu, and what plans are in place to do that?
Well, it certainly would be an important part of any response to an outbreak, is because you need doctors and nurses and so on to take care of people who are sick. And but right now, it's difficult to put a who's first and who's second, because you also need power to make sure that you have electricity to run your hospitals and your homes, and you need safe drinking water. So there's a long list of people that are going to be needed in a pandemic, and so I'd hesitate to put one's importance over another.
Okay. What steps do you think, and what steps are you advocating for individual residents of Washington State to take at this point and going forward as a way of helping the general effort or preparing themselves for the possible issues that could arise in a pandemic?
Well, the first thing I'd say is to just listen and learn about what a pandemic is and what an avian flu is. People fear things they don't understand. And I think if people can just do their best to educate themselves and go to our website and other websites and learn from the facts about avian flu and pandemics, that's going to help them a lot. We also know that there are some things that people can do to protect themselves from getting sick in any season. Things like washing your hands more often than most people do, covering your cough to make sure that if you are ill, you're not spreading it to your friends and families and coworkers and so on.
What's the role of the state government or local governments in enforcing rules like that to require people who are infected to wear masks, or I guess the next step about, on that process is quarantine? Are there policies in place now that would regulate the announcement and enforcement of quarantines on different levels within the state?
Well, there's certainly, we know what our quarantine, that we have the power to quarantine and isolate people in Washington State. It's a little bit more challenging to carry that out if you're talking about huge numbers of people ill like we have now. There's even questions on a national level of whether those tools are even effective after you truly are in a pandemic. So, we believe that the best way about it is to educate the public on things they can do, and that they're going to do the right thing to protect themselves and the rest of their community.
Does the state have plans for coping with the exigencies that would arise if 10, 20, 30% of the population became ill?
I'm not sure if I follow. What kind of plans exactly?
Well, if large percentages of the population become ill and it becomes difficult to operate the basic functions of the society, what plans are in place to cope with that, if any?
Well, you're exactly correct. That is one of the concerns about a pandemic, is that it is more than just a nasty flu season. It's an outbreak that could affect all of the basic support services we rely on and people are used to.
Like electricity, water, and food, for example.
You're exactly right. But we also know that if something is that large, that it is not something that government alone will be able to do. That's why we've been very active in going out and doing presentations to business leaders and communities around the state, because we're going to need help from business as well as government and the general public.
What form would that help take, as you see it?
That help would take would be large companies in our state thinking about this just like government is thinking about this.
Have they shared with you their thinking?
Well, they're certainly interested in it. That's why our state health officer has been invited to speak at many, many rotaries around the state, attended by people who work at Microsoft, Boeing, and many other large companies in our state. And they're certainly concerned about this. And we're asking them to treat it and think about it like they would any kind of emergency, which is, do they have plans in place to keep operating if a third of their people are sick? Do they have ways that some people can work at home, perhaps, or over the Internet? So in case the state has to recommend people avoid large gatherings, that they can continue to do the jobs that they need to do.
Are those companies and the state itself working on plans to let more people work at home, both to prevent the gatherings of large crowds that could help spread the disease, or to allow people who are sick to work without infecting other people? people.
You know, that kind of work is going on all levels. Certainly it's something we're looking at the State Department of Health, and we're encouraging other state agencies to look at, and we're encouraging businesses to look at that as well. And it's a learning process. People are just starting to understand and learn what pandemic flu is, and the next step is really to get them to think about how it could affect their business, their agency, and put a plan in place on how they can manage that.
Okay, so I guess the biggest and the, pretty much the last question here is what you see is the relative speed with which these plans are going to be developed and the likelihood that the pandemic will arrive before, after, or during the preparation of those plans.
Well, you know, I've heard it said by our state health officer that there's a high likelihood we'll have a pandemic in my lifetime, in your lifetime. Can we predict whether it's going to be tomorrow or 2 years from tomorrow? No, but we know it's a real concern, and that's why it's a top priority for the Department of Health, and we'd like to see it be a major priority for others as well. We've done good work. Washington is ahead of many areas of the country because we've made it a priority earlier. Largely in part because we have such close ties with Asian communities, and we know with some of the avian flu cases in the Asian communities that we perhaps are at a higher risk of cases coming here than other parts of the country. So we're working closely, we're doing good planning, but there's a lot of work ahead of us. The kind of things we're talking about, business continuity plans, specific quarantine plans and so on, that takes a massive amount of time and a large amount of people and a large amount of money. And we're doing all of those things, but they do take time.
Okay. I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us about it today. I'll let you get back to the important work that you're already doing.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye. Mm-hmm.